Just for the record, I ain't the least bit happy about this. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that always sheds a tear when its pet cockroach dies. Now, Christopher Lambert is best known today for his role as the Highlander, the long-haired immortal with a very unconvincing Scottish accent. He starred as Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod in no fewer than four films, and also squeezed in an appearance in the spin-off TV show. He might have made his name bellowing, "There can be only one," but that clearly wasn't his attitude when it came to sequels. Because when someone offered the raspy-voiced Frenchman the chance to make a follow-up to a futuristic prison drama he'd once starred in, he naturally jumped at the chance. And that, of course, is the film we're reviewing here, Fortress 2 Re-Entry. To help me look at the film, I've called in an expert in sequels, a man who is never more excited than when he sees a film title followed by a Roman numeral. It's that sequel guy, Dom O'Brien. How you doing, Dom?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Well, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, very well. And thanks for joining me to look at this particular sequel, because, you know, I've given you the big build-up as the sequel guy. Now, I know that's because you're working on a book called Return of the Sequel, naturally enough. So do you want to tell people about what you're doing with that and why you're so interested in sequels?
Yeah, so really I started doing the book about 5 years ago. And the idea was to look at sequels that were either obscure or underrated. But I really love sequels because when I was younger, the first film I can remember going to the cinema, that I had my first proper cinema experience, was going to see Back to the Future Part 3. And from then on, really, I've always watched films in a bizarre order. I've always watched the sequel first or sequels first prior to the actual first film. So what I really wanted to do was really hone down the stuff that I enjoyed into a book that would hopefully be an eye-opener for the majority of people that aren't aware of there being certain sequels to, say, something like a film called Shark Attack. So Shark Attack is a trilogy of films. They're basically rip-off versions of Deep Blue Sea. So the first one is about a genetically engineered shark, and it's incredibly boring. And then Shark Attack 2 is a really fun 80-minute action film with some really fun shark action and stock footage. And obviously Shark Attack 3 is most well-known for having John Barrowman quote an infamous line that I would not quote right now. and has some of the most atrocious green screen effects ever. But the second one is actually a really solid film, and it takes the idea from Jaws 3 about capturing a shark and putting it on display, and then sort of making a really weird kind of treasure hunt piratey adventure, and found them to be incredibly enjoyable films, offering probably more entertainment than I've had with bigger budget films recently. Just because the ideas are there, but the execution isn't always perfect. And I like that. I like a little bit of rough around the edges. I like a little bit being the underdog for a set of films that people necessarily hate. Not because I want to be different, but I feel like they kind of deserve the accolades. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, I think it's time we got stuck into Fortress 2. So let's see if Trailer Man can clear up how important Christopher Lambert's character is.
John W. You are charged with the crimes of treason, terrorism, and unlawful procreation. Your sentence is life in the space prison, Fortress.
There can be no escape.
I wouldn't bet on that.
He was the most valuable warrior in the Resistance. But just when he thought his fight was over, the final battle...
Been waiting a long time for this.
...was just beginning.
Now, where you going?
Someone has to turn off the lights.
No pardon.
We gotta seal the door!
No parole.
That's what I'm talking about!
No escape.
What's he doing?
Fortress 2.
Re-entry.
Just for the record, I am least bit happy about this.
Our hero is John Brennick. He's on the run, having escaped a high-tech prison run by the evil Mentel Corporation, which is what happened in the first film. Unfortunately, within minutes of the start of Fortress 2, Re-Entry, Brennick is recaptured and sent to Mentel's swanky new, even more top-security jail. Naturally, our man resolves to escape, but breaking out this time looks infinitely trickier. Certainly, it looks like tying together bedsheets might not work this time. That's because Mentel's latest penitentiary is orbiting the Earth. Yup, they've given it a sci-fi upgrade and stuck it in space. Heading up the cast once again is Christopher Lambert. In the eclectic supporting cast is blaxploitation legend Pam Grier, Willie Garson, who people may best remember for his recurring role in Sex in the City, along with a bunch of veteran British TV actors. So we've got perennial small screen heavy Nick Brimble, the incredibly versatile Patrick Malahide, who's acted in everything from Game of Thrones to James Bond to a recurring role in Minder back in the 80s. And we've also got Liz May Bryce, who was a star in the delightfully trashy TV prison drama Bad Girls. The film was directed by Jeff Murphy, who directed quite a few famous sequels, helming Under Siege 2 Dark Territory and Young Guns 2. So with all of that out of the way, Dom, what did you make of Fortress 2?
Initially, when I first saw Fortress 2, I found it to be very derivative. It was just rehashing the first entry, just on a lower budget, and as you said, in space. I watched it again in recent years, and I've actually started warming up to it a bit more, because yes, it does make the same sort of story leaps as the first film, with none of the wit and humour that Stuart Gordon added to his sci-fi, but it does have a certain charm to it in a kind of low budget, schlocky sci-fi kind of way. I must admit, the opening is really good, actually, when you look at it, because you've
it's
got
very quick, isn't it? It really gets straight into some action and gets the story up and running very quickly.
It does. It knows that you know about the first film, and it goes, right, we don't need to do any kind of more exposition dumps. It's there. This is what Brennick's doing now, 10 years after what's happened in the first film. The happy ending isn't so happy because they're on the run still. And I love the fact, because you actually see his military prowess mentioned in the first film, as he has all these traps set up for the Mentel Corporation when they finally find him and his family. And I would have preferred, honestly, if it was more of a chase movie as opposed to... But then again, it wouldn't tie in with the title Fortress. But then again, it's a sequel, so what does it matter?
Well, I actually think, you know, you mentioned that it doesn't have the sort of perhaps the wit or humour of the first film. But actually, when I went back to this, I, like yourself, I've really warmed up on this film. And actually what I realised, certainly on the viewings I did for this podcast, was actually the amount of humour that is woven through the film. So I really enjoyed the relationship, in inverted commas, that the villain of this film has, Patrick Malahide, has with Zed, the kind of supercomputer which helps run the prison. And that's obviously borrowed from the first film, but I you know, they kind of run with that idea in here. And then you get lots of little moments within this film. So there are some of the interactions that the guards have between themselves when they're perving over the prisoners in the shower. There's some nice little humor with the men enjoying you know, the ladies having a shower, and vice versa, when you know, when the guys are having a shower, it's the female prison guard gets to sort of make a nice little joke that kind of calls back to sort of that earlier sort of bit of surreptitious voyeurism that was going on. And when we see you know, Brennick and his companions create some sort of device that can tap into the kind of, I don't know what you call it, the video network on the space station prison, and you know, they sort of channel hopping, and they come across some very strange content, which, you know, like there's some I think it's meant to be some sort of pornography film where some guy's got a metronome covering his genitals, and You know, so somebody really had some fun with, okay, what are they going to see on this TV? What can we come up with to, you know, that will kind of create a little bit of laugh? So I really enjoyed, I think there's quite a little humour like peppered around this film. And I thought it really elevated, as you said, it is fairly generic material. It is kind of very much the first film again. But like, I thought that, you know, Jeff Murphy kind of gives us a little bit of drama, gives us a little bit of action, and then gives us a little bit of humour. And I thought he kind of marshalled the material quite nicely throughout the whole film.
I mean, you can see that if you make a reference to Under Siege 2 as well. Like, again, Under Siege 2 is an inferior sequel to the first Under Siege. But then you do have this moment where Jeff Murphy seems to love the bad guys, and he's able to get the best and the best kind of, like, what is it? Pantomime villain, I think, is the word I want to use.
Definitely.
And you kind of miss that in films nowadays. There is no pantomime villain. So it's kind of like, yeah, he knows exactly what he wants to do. And I think when I mentioned humour, it lacking the humour of the first one, I think because Stuart Gordon was a very intelligent man who was able to craft satirical humour in a really interesting way. Whereas this, you're right, there is humorous bits to Fortress 2. I just don't think it sounds really like I'm giving it a backhanded compliment here, but not nearly as intelligent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think there's a slightly more satirical element to the humour in the first film than there is in the second film, which is, it's not to say it isn't funny, but it's more just conventional type of humour. But there's still some, as I think we've both agreed, there's still a bit of sort of nice humour woven through this film. And yeah, I think we definitely need to. It's a great point you make about the villain in this film, and certainly, yeah, one of the highlights of Under Siege 2, which, yeah, another Jeff Murphy film, is without doubt the villains in that film are absolutely fantastic. Eric Boghossian, brilliant in that film. And yeah, Patrick Malahide, pantomime villain is absolutely the word to describe him in this particular film. He's clearly, I think, having a whale of a time, you know, with a bit of a meaty part, and he's been given license to I don't think he's necessarily hamming it up, but, you know, he's going big. But we've touched on the first film a little bit, and, you know, how do we think that this film, you know, stacks up compared to that one? Obviously, this one is made on a much smaller budget, so, you know, the sets are all clearly inferior to those in the first film. But I guess more in terms of, like, the ideas or the continuation of the world in which this film is creating. How well do you think that, Fortress 2 sort of, picks up and continues from the first film?
It is a lot more low budget than the first. And I think stylistically, it doesn't have nearly as many interesting moments. I'll be honest, I'm a sucker for blue goo goo in general. And there wasn't enough goo in this film, barring whatever they're eating. So, yeah, but I really like that. And I also really like the fact that you had an eccentric character. I forget what his name is because I wrote it down. One of the ex-Mentel Corporation individuals with the bald head. And he has an implant put in wrong. And he ends up making him a bit brain damaged. And him and his relationship with his cockroach, which I'm sure we'll get onto later on, was actually quite sweet. And I, you know, as sweet as you can be for an action film. But yeah, I do enjoy it a lot, actually.
I think in many ways this film, like, is a very good sequel in terms of, like, carrying on, I think, this idea of, like, what would a futuristic prison look like in terms of these, you know, implantable devices that can be used to restrain prisoners. I mean, there are some ideas that in the first film that are very interesting, but don't get really followed through on in here. So, you know, that kind of this world where people can only have children if it's licensed by the state. And that people, you know, are punishable by, you know, going to prison if they have unlicensed breeding. So, you know, another idea that is in that film is that, you know, we have this supercomputer or this artificial intelligence that is helping run the prison. But then, you know, there's a bit of a reveal later in the film where we learn that actually Kurtwood Smith is not really entirely human. He's a kind of cyborg who's now sort of running this prison. And then that idea is quite interesting and plays out in some interesting ways in that first film. But so those ideas, this kind of the world of state controlled pregnancy, of cyborg, you know, there's certainly no cyborgs in this film. So some of those, I think, you know, some of those ideas, I think it wouldn't make sense really for them to have tried to continue those ideas more into this film. I think Fortress, there's a bit more intellectually going on with it, and I think that a lot that probably comes from Stuart Gordon as much as anybody else in that film. But I think Fortress 2 is a very honourable follow-up entry to that first film.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. And I think people might necessarily think, well, because it hasn't got Stuart Gordon attached and obviously released direct to video, there's this kind of stigma attached to it that may go to them, well, we don't really want to watch that because there's no need. Stuart Gordon film was like a cult classic or has become a cult classic. And I'm glad they didn't rehash the cyborgs. As much as I like cyborgs in films, I'm really glad they didn't rehash the Kurtwood Smith idea again.
Well, we've got quite an eclectic cast here. So, you know, we've already spoken about, you know, Patrick Malahide as the villain here. And I think we're all sort of agreed he's pretty fabulous in this part. But, you know, what did you make of the rest of the cast here? Because as I said in the introduction, it's a pretty eclectic bunch of actors that we get here. So, you know, who stood out for you, perhaps either for good reasons or for bad?
I was a bit disappointed by having them get Pam Grier but not having her do enough. It was kind of upsetting.
She's wasted, really, in this.
She is. But I didn't think anybody sort of individually stood out. Nick Brimble, I think, as well, was really misused.
Yeah, he's wasted again. He's much better than what we get here. I mean, I see it slightly differently to you. I actually think that I agree with you about the characters who are wasted. So I think Pam Grier definitely wasted. Nick Brimble feels a bit like a fifth wheel. I did think that the Marcus character, he's a sort of wise ass sidekick. It turns out to be a bit of a sort of electronics genius. I actually kind of think that he actually feels like a character in the film. I think Liz May Bryce feels like a character in the film. And I mean, she's not a classic character by any, but she kind of brings enough to that role. And I think, you know, like Sato as the sort of sadistic prison guard, again, just brings enough flavor to his role to kind of make those characters. I mean, they are stock characters, but they feel kind of fully realized enough to make the film work, and certainly I think elevate it a little bit above like the umpteen other sort of low budget sort of prison movies. I did think there was an opportunity this film had that again was a bit wasted, but they're kind of only a minor part of the film, so it doesn't really hurt it too much. But it's this sort of gang of Russians who I think the idea is that they are sort of, they're not controlling the prison, but they've got some sort of extra sort of leverage within the prison population. And they didn't really convince me, A, either as Russians, or B, as a group that would have, you know, sort of carved out any kind of perks for themselves or be able to sort of have the rest of the prison, you know, worried about them as a group.
Well, what's also quite fascinating is the head Russian with the glasses and the dark hair was actually was the writer for both Fortress films.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I think, so he, I can't remember his name because I wrote it down and I can't find it right now. But he, so he is the reason why he hardly speaks any English is because he's probably not a very good actor. and, you know, he's a good writer, but he's not a good actor.
Well, we've seen quite a few prison escape franchises over the years. So there are currently three escape plan films with Sylvester Stallone. Kurt Russell has been in two Escape From films. And we've obviously got the Fortress franchise as well. So, what's your favourite of those prison escape franchises? Or maybe you've got other sort of prison movie franchises that you enjoy. I guess you could throw the Undisputed films into this category as well. So yeah, so any of those you particularly like, or is there other ones that you'd like to mention?
Obviously, Escape from New York and Escape from LA. Well, particularly Escape from New York. People absolutely adore that film for all the right reasons. It's a really great John Carpenter film. And I actually really like Escape from LA as well, despite what many people think of it, particularly with the slightly wonky CGI and the surfing for no reason whatsoever. but I actually really like Escape from LA, and not because it's on brand for me because it's a sequel, but it's because I also like the character actors they got in there. Escape Plan, I feel like the first one in the series was good, but it was about 10 minutes too long. And I like the idea of futuristic prisons as well, which is why I'm discussing Fortress, obviously. but I have only seen the second Escape Plan, and I know a lot of people don't particularly like it because of it's got bad editing. And
I really like the second Escape Plan. If anything, I prefer it to the first one.
Is it because it's a shorter film as well?
I think that it's shorter is always better. But,
but I feel like people are disappointed as well because Stallone was sidelined as well as a character. He's only really there briefly in more of a cameo capacity. And I thought, like, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, that's the route you go in. I haven't seen the third Escape Plan much to... I'm failing as a sequel fan, actually, if I've not seen the third one. But from what I gather, it's only they only have a fight in a disused prison. There's no actual prison involved in that one.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me. But what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kids stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kids stuff.
Well, I've got two kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Sent Me podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studios, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. Having regurgitated every prison movie cliche imaginable, the makers of Fortress 2 at least have the decency to include every budding pyromaniac's favourite film trope, the chopper fireball. This happens early in the film while Lambert is being recaptured. After his hideout is discovered, croaky Christopher attempts to flee in a jeep. As a helicopter pursues him, Lambert brings out a handily loaded and available bazooka and shoots at the chopper. There is a nice fuselage destroying explosion. We get to see the wreckage fall to the ground behind Lambert, who does not look at the burning debris because, as we all know, heroes never bother looking back at explosions. But Dom, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I wanted more. Not just from a pyrotechnics point of view. I wanted more helicopters exploding. I was like, he's got a rocket launcher which came out of nowhere. Well, it didn't come out there. It was in the back of the car. But I would like to have seen how many rockets he had. If he's only that prepared to have one rocket and he's going to have multiple helicopters on him, that's just ill prepared. He's this military tactician. Why has he not got more rockets?
Oh, it was a good bazooka, wasn't it? I mean, they'd made it look futuristic. I mean, and it looked much bigger than any other bazooka I've seen. I mean, he did well to just get it up on his shoulder, I thought.
Yeah, I actually thought he was going to fire it and then fly backwards. Which actually would have been quite interesting to see if that was the case.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. And there needs to be more of that. More bazooka action with exploding helicopters with people flying backwards after they find a bazooka. I want more of that in films, please.
But it was quite brief, wasn't it? I mean, we do get to see some nice explosions, but probably for editorial, like, you know, exposing the limitations perhaps they were working with, the shots are quite brief. So what you do see is very good, but, you know, they obviously don't have the explosion. They obviously don't have the budget to really show you much more. And I think that's a bit of a shame, although, you know, we get to see some nice stuff. I mean, I will never tire of, you know, seeing, you know, the hero in a film being backlit by the exploding and burning wreckage of a helicopter. So, you know, we do get to see that as, you know, Lambert kind of, you know, then drives off in his vehicle. But, I mean, there was another helicopter in this sequence. I mean, could they not have stretched to blowing that one up, or maybe, you know, fatally wounding it or something?
I think what would have been great is, and as is a standard trope for most action films with exploding helicopters, why didn't he have explosive bullets in the machine gun he was firing at the helicopter to then cause that to then explode behind him? You could have just reused a shot from the last explosion to show it off. It would have been great.
But there is a nice little bit of tension to the scene, though, because we, you know, the helicopter is hunting Lambert and he's kind of disappeared into some trees, and they're, you know, they're switching to infrared to try and find him. Lambert's getting his bazooka out, so it's, you know, we're in a sort of showdown situation. Okay, who's going to be able to fire off their shot first? And, you know, we also get to see the helicopter pilots, you know, reacquire Lambert. They then realize the peril that they're in, you know, because he's got the bazooka out up on his shoulder and he's pointing it at them. So, you know, we get some nice little details in there, but yeah, I think those nice little details would have worked so much better if we just, you know, if they could have shown us a bit more, spent us a bit more time with the helicopter exploding in the sky, crashing to the ground, and perhaps a few further explosions there.
Yeah, like, it would have been great if you did get the good old-fashioned explosion in the sky, then the falling down a cliff, then another explosion for no reason whatsoever. That's what I want. I want an additional explosion from whatever fuselage they've hit that they missed with the rocket launcher. Oh, I miss it.
Yeah, I, for me, it's like properly punctuating a sentence. You need, you know, you need capital letter at the beginning and you need a full stop at the end. So you need, as you say, and that's how I see, though, that kind of sequence of explosions that that you've just described. But you know what? I think that probably just about wraps things up for this show. Dom, do you want to take a moment to tell people where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter under @thatsequelguy, same as my Instagram as well, where I post nonsense about sequel films. And I've also got the book I'm working on at the moment, which is Return of the Sequel. And I'm also started a new book project because I'm mad and insane because I don't need more stuff to do about the first two Guyver films.
Okay. Well, yeah, go and check out Dom online. As always, and here's something else you can do online, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website for more reviews of films where helicopters explode. If you can do something to help us get a new listener, we'd be eternally grateful. We'll be back soon, but until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.